This sermon was downloaded from www.spiritnerds.org. We equip Christians with thousands of strategic spiritual materials daily. Join millions of Christians around the world who have come to Spirit Nerds to learn about God and His Word today.
Ghana Jollof, Nigeria Jollof, right? We have ended it, Abi. We have ended it. Some people are really stubborn, oh. African Jollof, no more Ghana, Senegalese Wolof. Please, a round of applause for yourselves. No more. We bring everything together. The Shito, your father, we bring everything together. Fantastic. Please, like we said, oh my loud gone, we are loud, right? We are loud, right? So you have to help amplify the message by tweeting, Instagram, whatever it is. Just post whatever you hear. Those powerful things that made you say, right? Say, but also write them down. I had really powerful things, choices, collaboration, and courage, right? Those things we need to, you know, loud it on social media as well, using the hashtag, #ThePlatformNG2023, #ThePlatformNG2023. Our next speaker is Mr. Taiwo Oyedele. He is the chairman of the Presidential Committee on Fiscal Policy and Tax Reforms set up by the President Bola Ahmed Tinubu with a broad mandate to carry out critical reforms bordering on fiscal governance, revenue transformation, and economic growth facilitation. Prior to his current role, Mr. Oyedele was the fiscal policy partner and Africa tax practice leader at PwC, where he worked for 22 years, including 10 years in top leadership positions, gaining in-depth knowledge and diverse experience ranging from tax advisory and political and policy advocacy to business strategy consulting, leadership development, and policy design and execution. Mr. Oyedele is an accountant and economist by training. He's an author, a keynote speaker, mentor, and commentator on finance, business, and economic matters. Mr. Oyedele is a fellow of the Nigeria Leadership Initiative, member of the Global Tax Reform, and also a former member of the Global Governing Council of the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants, ACCA. He's an associate professor at Babcock University and a guest lecturer at the Lagos Business School. He's an alumnus of several executive education programs of the London School of Economics and Political Science, Yale University, and Harvard Kennedy School. He's also the founder and president of Impact Africa Foundation. Please let's make welcome to the platform, Mr. Taiwo Oyedele.
Thank you very much. Please, you may have your seat. It's still morning, so I'll say good morning, everyone. And thank you very much, Pastor Kwadu, for inviting me. It's my second time on the platform. I think the last time was about 8 years ago. So I've been looking forward to this day. The good thing is, the last time I was here, I was a private citizen criticizing everything that government did. Now they've said to me, stop complaining. Come and help us fix it. So I'm now one of the men and women in the arena. And what that means is there will be splashes of mud. There will be accusations, there will be mistakes. But we keep focusing on the goal and keep moving forward. So the topic that I have in the limited time available to me today is to talk about making Nigeria the springboard for the Africa we want through sound economic policies and responsible citizenship. I love the topic because it's about Africa. It's also about Nigeria. But more importantly, it's about us, the citizens of Africa. I'll start by telling you a story. Please follow me. I want to tell you the story of a country that we all know very well. The country was colonized by Europeans, and they changed the way of the people, including displacement of the native population. They even introduced European diseases, and they established exploitative economic systems, such as slavery and indentured servitude. Slavery played a central role in the development of the economy, particularly in the southern states. Slavery created significant wealth for the plantation owners, but perpetuated extreme economic disparity and racial injustices. The westward expansion of the country in the 19th century was marked by the displacement and mistreatment of indigenous people. The economic benefits of the expansion were unevenly distributed, leading to regional disparity in development. The Industrial Revolution in the 19th century brought economic growth, but it also led to harsh working conditions, child labor, and income inequality, particularly in urban areas. Throughout the country's history, racial discrimination and segmentation have denied opportunities and equal access to resources for minority groups, perpetuating underdevelopment in these communities. Periodic economic crises, including economic recessions, further exacerbated issues of poverty and underdevelopment, affecting both urban and rural areas. Gender inequalities, lack of access to quality education and healthcare disparities also contributed to underdevelopment, affecting various segments of the population. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to guess which country am I talking about? You guys are smart. That was the United States of America. Just in case you think it was Nigeria, it's not Nigeria. This country had made tremendous progress, but it's still not perfect. It is not perfect because, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, as of 2016, if you have $10 in your pocket and you do not owe anyone, you are wealthier than 15% of American households combined. Just think about that for a moment. If you have $10 and you are not owing anyone, your wealth, even though you are poor, is more than about 50 million Americans combined. Right. It will not be very different if they do the calculations today. This was a few years back. Where is that taking us? It's trying to remind us that development is a journey. You have to keep working at it. So, the next thing I'll talk to you about is, how about Nigeria's Africa? Yeah, seems like an interesting way of saying it, right? Nigeria's Africa. Nigeria is clearly the largest economy in Africa, especially by population. And we have the vision for Africa. And that vision is the Africa we want. It was adopted in 2013 by our African leaders. And that was the year when the African Union was 50 years old. So they thought we should plan for the next 50 years. So in 2013, they came up with Agenda 2063. Agenda 2063 has a vision for Africa to be an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful continent driven by its own citizens, representing a dynamic force in the international arena. Our leaders develop 7 aspirations, 20 goals, and 39 priority areas, ranging from ensuring that there is healthcare, education, and all the nice things you can imagine. Now, if you come home, home is Nigeria. What is our vision? What is the Nigerian dream? Does anybody know? Okay, even me. I have to try and Google it. And when I Googled it, I really couldn't find anything. The closest thing I found was in the recent document called Agenda 2050 that was developed by the immediate past administration. It has the vision, it has the mission, and it has objectives. It's difficult to remember any of them. I'll come back to that in a moment. So still on Nigeria's Africa, how do we better harness our resources and realize our potentials? Once I was young, now I'm not very young anymore. But we've always been talking about potentials. Everybody agrees, you cannot feed your family with potentials. Africa is home to over 1.2 billion people. Nigeria, with a population of over 200 million people, is roughly about 1 in every 5 Africans is Nigeria. The median age for Africa is 19. That makes us the youngest continent in the world. So Africa is young. And Nigeria is even younger. The median age for Nigeria is just over 18 years. Africa has a high percentage of the world's arable land and huge endowments of natural resources, but a mere $2.5 trillion economy, not even up to the economy of France, with just over 60 million people. It's not very different. Nigeria is just over 400 billion, also about 20% of Africa. So you could see the reflection of Africa in Nigeria, or maybe I should say Nigeria reflecting on Africa. So the question is, can we really and truly have the Africa we want without the Nigeria that we need? And to be able to do that, we need to move from thoughts to actions. When I looked at the Africa We Want document, it's beautiful. It was written 10 years ago. If I compare where Africa was 10 years ago versus where we are today, I can't find any major progress. In fact, some of the countries where you could fly to as a Nigerian and get visa on arrival had introduced visas. Yet, one of our objectives is we wanted to come together as a continent. Now, remember the topic of my presentation? We're looking at how can we catalyze Africa's growth and development with Nigeria playing a key role as the springboard A springboard is a strong yet flexible platform that enables you to gain some mileage, advantage, or impetus. So what are these policies that we are talking about that can help you reform your economies and get the results you want? I know that most people remember monetary policies, if not for anything, the recent Naira redesign reminded all of us how bad things can get when you get just one policy wrong. And sometimes it's not just about the economic activities, values that you have lost, financial losses. It's about lives, which is irreplaceable. Monetary policy involves the management of a country's money supply, interest rate, and the rest of it to get price stability, control inflation, and ensure stable exchange rates. But we also have fiscal policy, which is the job I've been given to do on behalf of our country with so many committed, resourceful persons working with me. This is how you manage taxation, government spending, and debt to attain economic development. How about trade policy? What do you sell? Who do you sell to internationally? And so on and so forth. How about industrial policy, where you intentionally develop certain regions and certain areas with targeted interventions to be able to do X, Y, Z? We have regulatory policies. What should you regulate? How should you regulate them? Labor and employment policies. Do we believe in meritocracy? Or must we just focus on he's from my tribe and that should be okay? How about environmental and energy policy, human development and social protection policy, and national values and cultural policies? What are the things we celebrate? What are the things we believe in? And international relations policy. So I thought to mention a few of these policies. Those are 10 already. So they're not just monetary and fiscal policy. But what's really important is that policy is not what you say that you will do. In fact, policy is not just about what you do. It is more about how you do it. I'll tell you for a fact, almost every country in the world allows you to register a business. That's a policy. But if it takes you 5 months somewhere in Africa to register a business with a lot of sweats, and you can do that in 24 hours in a place like Singapore. So the issue is not the policy, it is how the policy is implemented. So first and foremost, in designing your policies, you must ensure that, in fact, it doesn't matter how many people you have invited to be at the table. If data had not been invited, your policies will give you the opposite result of your intentions and aspirations. And those data and evidence you use must be such that are objective, not the ones you've manipulated for the outcome that you have set out to accomplish. There must be proper coordination of those policies so you don't have monetary pulling to the right, fiscal pulling to the left, and education policy, for example, we're confused. That will not get you anywhere. And more importantly, there must be measurable outcomes. What I have seen a lot in Africa, and even so in Nigeria, is that we celebrate efforts. Maybe it's not bad, but we should be focusing on outcomes. Someone will say, because we are adopting technology, we have developed a website, and then we're supposed to get a tick and clap, only to find out that the website is more useless than the manual process that we had before. So we should start focusing on outcomes. Now, I mentioned data, and data is very important. So I'll share a few data points with you that you may not necessarily agree with, but you know data and facts are not things to disagree with. You just may not like them and you move on with your lives. One of which I'm going to ask you is, if you are going to make a guess, what is the percentage of Nigerians living abroad today? Anyone wants to try? 40? 15? Okay, so I'm hearing numbers in double digits and all of them are wrong. The percentage of Nigerians living abroad, according to the United Nations, you know, sometimes we can't even rely on our own data, because we thought that we had millions of Nigerians in Niger until everybody wanted to come back. We only needed two planes. And there were no more Nigerians wanting to come back. So I'm referring to the United Nations data. It shows that as of 2020, there were 1.7 million Nigerians living abroad. And you must have heard the U.S. said, I've heard them say twice, that there are about 500,000 Nigerians in the U.S., and that's where you have the most Nigerians in the world other than Nigeria. So over the past 2-3 years with the immigration, the numbers combined are under 500,000. In other words, officially, people who have records living outside Nigeria are under 3 million out of 220 million people. That's less than 2%. So that is not only lower than the African average, it's much lower than the global average. In fact, when I was looking at the ranking, Nigeria ranked 113 in the world in terms of number of Nigerians living abroad. You may want to say that how about people who went without Pali, right? They just jackpot somehow. They didn't get papers. Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think those numbers are huge. And even if they are, they're not living abroad, they're hiding abroad. That's a difference. All right. I'm not trying to underestimate the impact of our people living our countries. I think, for me, it's not about how many people are leaving the country. It's about why they are leaving. Even if it's 0.001, we should not have to frustrate our citizens to the extent that they would rather be anywhere but home. That is where the problem is. So, what's our role? I said I was going to give you a couple, but I see my time is going down. The other one I wanted to tell you is, you know, since first subsidy removal, it's a painful sacrifice that Nigerians are making. And sometimes, including those of us in the room, and most likely people watching us online, are the privileged people who don't feel the entire impact we're talking about. If you're an urban poor, life is almost impossible. When subsidy was removed, the price of petroleum products, PMS in particular, at the pump, went up by more than 200%. You know what happened? Traffic in Lagos disappeared. Now, one of the reasons why it disappeared was because a lot of people could no longer maintain buying fuel to be on the road. And then they parked their cars. Do you think those are the upper class people? No. The upper class people would just complain briefly and they'll pay and they'll still move on. They drove exactly the way they drove before, after the removal. The lower middle class who have cars, those cars are not new. They are Tokumbo used ones, right? It is Tokumbo and it's also used. Those cars break down regularly, but we keep going, right? So they are the ones who will visit the vulcanizers regularly. And so is the mechanic. Who is thinking, since those guys now are parking their vehicles at home, the vulcanizer is not finding jobs to do. So is the mechanic. It's not just the vulcanizer, the apprentices and the families that they support. Life has become impossible. But we all agree it was a necessary policy, but we need to react and respond in a way that is robust enough so we can take some of those pain of our people. And it has to be that every single naira we save from that is spent on the people 100%, but spent in the places where to make the most impact. That's where data comes in. And I have argued that the most impacted vulnerable people are not in villages. I used to be a villager. Our contact point with petrol was near zero. We trekked to the farm, trekked to school, trekked to market, and that was all the trekking we needed to do. No generators, no vehicles. The privileged ones in the villages had bicycles. We don't need petrols for that. Many villages, I can tell you now, have no idea that they had removed fuel subsidy. But if you're an urban poor, you commit to work, you pay rent, you buy food. We produce our foods in the village. In other words, we must make sure that we're able to attend to these problems where it's most painful. Nigerians who say, if only our refineries are working, then we'll be fine. Nothing can be further from the truth than that. In fact, Nigerians should come together and say, please make sure that our refineries don't work. We should sell them. Maybe you have not been following the story. The National Assembly said we have spent over 10 trillion naira maintaining our refineries, even when they have not produced anything. The time that they were producing, the GMD of NNPC at the time, who is now the CEO of NNPC Limited, said, and I quote, "We had to shut down the ones that were producing because they took crude of $100 and produced refined product of $97. You have not added overhead. My point is, if Nigerian refineries produce crude oil, unless we deal with our inefficiency, 1 liter of petrol will be the most expensive in the world. You would have succeeded in replacing the subsidy at the pump with subsidy of the refineries." Data. As citizens, what should we do? Don't run down your country. You just saw me started with America, right? Every country is working at it. If you think Nigeria is hopeless, you'll be right. If you think there's hope, you also be right. But I'll encourage you to go for the latter. Don't resent your country and wish evil for your nation, regardless of what the situations might be. I did some little calculations as an accountant. Can't help myself from calculating stuff. And I said, if you have about 220 million population with life expectancy of about 53 years, the equivalent of one day that is wasted in Nigeria is over 10,000 lifetimes. So if you wish Nigeria evil for just one day, it's as good as being an accomplice to killing 10,000 people. You need to play your parts, including being honest. Sometimes we say we are smart because someone trusted you and you failed them. That's not being smart, that's being evil. It is not enough to be smart, you must be trustworthy. Speak to business owners today and you see how they struggle to find people. If you find people, everybody wants to take from you. And then to get to a point you can't sustain the business, you close down. I'm not saying all Nigerians are like that, but we need to make sure that those behaviors become the exceptions, not the norm. We need to show empathy to others, and we need to be diligent. Sometimes if you're looking for artisans, you're going to be thinking, should I have to go and import them? You know, someone in my house, they did the fittings and everything, and then I saw first the switch for the AC was not straight. As I was still complaining about it, I saw the road heater on it. So I called the guy and said, this is an air conditioner. This thing is not straight. So the guy is working. I said, it's not about whether it's working. So why is the switch saying heater? He says, when they went there to buy, they couldn't find the one for AC. Being diligent. Now, I'll try and wrap up by talking to you about my call to action. What should we do about all of this? We're not here to complain. We're here to solve our problems. We've realized that complaining doesn't solve any problems at all. As Africa, I'll tell you what I think we need to do. Then I'll tell you what we should do as Nigerians, and then as Nigeria, and then as Nigerians and African citizens. Africa must integrate. We must enable one Africa and remove barriers and restrictions that don't make sense, like the visa restriction that Vusi was talking about. Even Aliko Dangote, being the richest man on the African continent, said he will need over 30 visas to go across Africa. An American will need less than that. How can that possibly make sense? We must empower our people. Population means nothing if they can't buy anything. Profit means nothing to investors if they cannot get their money out when they need it. And talent means nothing if it cannot be trusted. We must spread good governance in Africa, not crisis, not conflict. As Nigeria, we must build a nation that Nigerians can be proud of. If you look into history, whether it's the US, whether it's Singapore, whether it's now the UAE, the likes of Dubai, whether it's Rwanda, there in Africa, the countries that have transformed, they've done two very important things. One, build strong institutions. Number two, invest in your people. If you look at how we are handling education, you will have big questions as to whether we are serious about investing in our people. Nigeria must set a clear vision that people can connect with. I don't know whether that vision can be set for us by a political party. It has to be set by the Nigerian people. We have to provide good governance and invest in our people. Government must budget better, must spend better, must report better. That's accountability and transparency. Imagine if we allow the right environment. It is not every Nigerian who wants to leave Nigeria. I gave you the number when I started, right? The reality is that the number of Nigerians or percentage of Nigerians who are capable of leaving Nigeria, if they wanted to, are less than 5%. 95% of our population, even if they want to, and they pray and they fast, they still can't go anywhere because nobody wants them. And if they mistakenly find the money for the passports, you know, there are countries we can visit without visas today, right? They cannot raise the money for a flight. If you give them 4 years to save, it still not be enough. In other words, even if you are planning to leave, just remember, there are 95% of us who cannot go anywhere. All the countries that have been developed were developed by their people. There's nothing wrong in leaving, don't get me wrong. But if you leave, don't wish the rest of us bad. And if you're here, and while you're here and continue to be here, don't wish us evil. If we have citizens that are actively working against their own country, there's no amount of prayers you pray. That country will not succeed. So, if today we take out the legal impediments, and I know because it's my area, from the tax laws, if you have global organizations today looking for people to hire in the tech industry or any global value chain, and you want to employ people who are in Nigeria, why being in Nigeria to work internationally? If you ask questions from any professional, you will run back. And I've received those questions myself from three global multinationals that are massive. They do revenue in billions of dollars. Question, they are Taiwo. We would like to employ Nigerians in Nigeria to work for us. Please answer the following question. Before I started, I knew they were not coming back. I was going to do it myself, as patriotic as I am, I would not do it. Because there's a provision, for example, that says, should you hire any employee in Nigeria, not only would that employee have to pay their own personal income taxes, which is fine, the employer must come to Nigeria and pay their corporate income taxes. So imagine it's you, right? You can hire people in Kenya, in India. What's the big deal about Nigerians? You let them be. But imagine that we fix these impediments, because these were rules that we inherited from our colonial masters in the day that there was no internet. The world had moved on. We have refused to reform those rules. If we allow 1 million Nigerians in Nigeria to work within the global value chain, imagine they earn only $1,000 per month. That's easily $1 billion flowing into this economy. Naira will not be at 1,000. Which means we all have to benefit from that. We should fix it. It wasn't imposed on us by the United Nations or God. They were self-imposed problems, and it is us to fix them. Finally, as citizens, you must commit. And when you say commitment, it's different from willingness to do something, right? If you are willing to do something, sometimes you do it when it's convenient. And if it's not, you take care of yourself. When you are committed, you do it regardless. Regardless. So we have to be committed to being part of the solution to Africa's problem and not be a part of the problem. What should you do? Three things. Number one, hold our leaders to account. It's easier to hold our leaders to account today, in my view, than it was maybe 20 years ago. All that you need to do is you need a hashtag. Where is Lucy again? When they see numbers, they pay attention to it. But go online and see what people are liking, right? It's either somebody who is half naked. You see the likes of budgets doing very important analysis of projects, and you see 15 likes. And then we pray and fast. If we take those little actions, it will make big impact and differences. Put national interest first. Don't settle for mediocrity. Celebrate success that comes from hard work. And question unexplained wealth. If anybody is spending the money they have recklessly, chances are that it is not clean money. People who work hard to earn money, don't spend it recklessly. You won't find a single one. Embrace humanity to others. That's the spirit of Ubuntu. You are because I am. We can win together. Value life and be your neighbor's keeper. And finally, offer to serve if you can. And if you cannot, don't discourage good people who want to serve. According to Mahatma Gandhi, he says, the best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. I'll close by sharing this quote by Abraham Lincoln. If we do not like the Africa we have today, and the Nigeria you see is not the Nigeria of your dream, we can work together to create the Africa and the Nigeria we want. Abraham Lincoln said the best way to predict the future is to create it. Thank you for paying attention to me.
Dearly beloved, we believe you've been greatly blessed by this sermon. Do you want to download more sermons of your favorite preachers? Visit www.spiritnerds.org today. Reach us by email for more information and concerns at spiritnerds.org@gmail.com. God bless you.